All right. I'm Jess Shane, and it is May 31st, 2026. I am here at the Hudson Library, recording an oral history for the Community Library of Voice and Sound. I'm here with Sarah Cody. We met the other night at Governor's Pub. And Sarah Cody, can I ask you to introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Sarah Cody, and not to correct you, but it's Governor's Tavern. I am a bartender and waitress there.
I'd love to hear about your relationship with Hudson.
I have a long relationship with Hudson. I would say I was introduced to Hudson in my early teen years. I lived in a neighboring town, and Hudson was like a rival town from the town I grew up in. But I did have a girlfriend who went to the same school as me, which was Ichabod Crane, but she actually lived in the Hudson School District. So we would come into Hudson together as teenagers to like hang out with the rival boys. But even before that, like, I knew that like Hudson wasn't a nice place to come. So like when I was a kid, my mom would say things like, we didn't move out of New York City to go hang out in a place like Hudson, because it was very poverty stricken, low income. A lot of the storefronts were just vacant. A lot of the apartments, buildings were vacant or run down. So that's probably like, I mean, obviously the history of Hudson is very, very long, but for my history, that would be like 1992, 93. I was probably like 13 years old at this time. And then when I got a little older, there were like a couple bars in Hudson. So it was like the first like going out experiences I would have as a young adult were in Hudson. Also still not like a great place to hang out, not necessarily very safe or wasn't very posh like it is now. And then I have a whole new relationship in my adult life when I moved back to the area, because I started working in Hudson in 2017, and Hudson had had this big revitalization in the 10 years prior. So it was very interesting to see the amount of opportunity that had come to Hudson at that time. And I work in hospitality, I work in restaurants and bars, so it had a lot of opportunity for someone in my field of work.
I'm just gonna move this and turn it down in my own ears for a second. What brought you back?
An aging relative. My grandmother was aging, and I was living about an hour away in Albany, and I told my sister I would come back to help care for my elderly grandmother. I was supposed to move in with my grandmother, and last minute I was like, I can't do that. That's fucking crazy. She's crazy. I'm not doing that. And I got my own apartment, but I did move back to the area. But also things like I wasn't necessarily living a straight life in Albany. I knew getting away from some of the people I was associating with would help me kind of straighten out, maybe not drink so much or do so much cocaine on a Friday. And it did. I stopped using cocaine altogether. So that was definitely a plus. But I did connect with my family on a bigger level, and I assisted in the way that I mentally could for myself in the care of my elderly grandmother.
What was your relationship with your grandmother like?
I love-hate relationship. Like, she could be such a sweet old lady, but deep down I always knew, like, my mom had said this to me at a young age, that we had moved away from my grandmother, so she had no influence in raising us. So I always kind of had that in the back of my mind of what kind of person my grandmother really was, like under the surface, because surface level, she was very sweet, very religious. But when you really got to the nitty gritty, she was like a narcissist. She was very manipulative. She was very controlling. She was very judgmental, you know, not very open-minded when it came to different populations like LGBTQ or minorities. And it was like very obvious to me that those weren't values that I held. So it was a tumultuous relationship.
How did you negotiate that when you were caring for her?
It was easy to kind of just do the caretaking because that was the right thing to do. And like caretaking for me was like running her to doctor's appointments or maybe taking her out to lunch or doing some like grocery shopping for her. I would like the best moments would be like spending time with her and like playing rummy, where it's like that's the only conversation we could really have is like what's going on in the card hand, because bigger conversations, I guess I never really went too deep with her because there was no like changing her mind in a sense. She used to call me a good time Charlie, and I think that it was really, it was an insult, you know, like it was more of like, it wasn't something that she was saying. She made it sound like it was cutesy and like, oh, you're a good time Charlie, but deep down I am a spinster. I'm not married. I don't have any kids. Like, she thought I cared about other things more than like settling down, having a husband and kids, which obviously I did care about other things, but she couldn't relate to that. Like, she couldn't understand that I didn't want to get married. She would say things to me like, don't you want to meet a nice fella? And I would respond with, oh, I've met a lot of nice fellas. She would laugh it off, but I know deep down she thought I was like a spinster.
You said you weren't able to go that deep with her in terms of conversation. Is there someone in your life where you're able to have really deep conversations?
I mean, I have like my chosen family that they know, like, I have my chosen family who, yeah, like, we can talk about politics openly. We can talk about world issues openly without any kind of, like, stigma of putting, like, religion on it or putting politics into it. Just talking about it as what it is. So, yes, I do have those people, and they're typically my chosen family, not people I'm related to.
Who's someone in your chosen family that you were picturing when you were just telling
me? My friend Janice, who I met in sixth grade at Ichabod Crane, and she's still my dearest friend now, but definitely somebody who has been a sister, a family member. I have like three of those girls. I have Janice, I have Morgan, and I have my other friend Shauna. And they're all those, like, chosen people. It makes me emotional to think about it.
I have this, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's funny when you grow up in a small town. So many people, like, can't wait to get out of that town. And I did that, too. And something, like, brought me back here, and I'm so happy it did. Because I love it here. I knew I was going to get emotional. Comes with age. So there's a certain age you hit as a woman that you always need a tissue. And I just bought some at Walmart because I was running out. Yeah, so I have my chosen family who has always just been, we've always just accepted each other for who we are. And I'm very lucky because I've had those women now in my life for, gosh, I want to say 30 years, but it's 37 years, like, since I was preteen, I've known these women.
How has your relationship with them changed over time?
It's funny because people, you know, they're all still very local and accessible, but they also all have children and very different lives. But when it comes to, like, emotional connection, like, it hasn't changed. We're all so, like, available to each other on that level. What really only changes is that we're not, like, riding our bikes through the village of Kinderhook singing Grateful Dead songs. Like, we're like, sitting in a garage at someone's house that they own singing Grateful Dead songs, you know? Like, it's just a matter of, like, time and place and how things in their life change. So they, you know, they all have families or some sort of modern family. I didn't choose that path. The more I see the trials and tribulations that they deal with, the more validated I feel by not going down that path. And also, like, so many things in life happen. Like, people die. So those things change. But they've always been, like, it's such a constant when it comes to, like, emotional availability. Even if we can't just, like, be there physically for each other. It's really special.
Is there someone... We can go somewhere else if you don't
want to. No, it's okay.
But I'm wondering if there's someone you lost that you want to tell me about. We can go somewhere else, too.
No, that's okay. Both my parents. Both my parents passed so long ago, and it's still so raw. But my mom was really hard because she was just such a shining light, and I know that those four women in my life also look at my mother that way. She was such a presence in all of our young lives that it makes me really sad that they also lost her. It's also very special when they talk about the memories of her. it's so funny. So my dad also died. My dad was kind of just like, my mom was everything. So when she died, he really never recovered. He was like a gambler and just, like, never could, like, get his life together. And he wasn't, like, a drug user or anything. He's just, like, just a guy. And he had become homeless. And I got him an apartment renting from Morgan, who is someone I've mentioned. Her parents were renting my dad a room, basically, in their house. And my dad died in their house, and my friend Morgan's dad is the one that discovered him. And my friend Morgan's the one that called me to tell me my father had died, because it was, like, sudden. Just, like, having that connection with someone is so weird, because I'm already so connected to her. To have this, like, big thing happen that just draws me to her even more. It's very interesting that it kind of, like, happened that way from our childhood, you know, and our parents knowing each other to, like, full circle of them being so, like, open to helping my family ultimately to like have to deal with my father dying in their house. Really crazy. It's not very easy to talk about, but it's also something that just like happens. We joke about it all the time. It's something that we can definitely like make light of, but to really talk about it in a raw form is, it's very emotional. But I feel very lucky to have grown up in like such a small community, but to have these like very important connections with those, you know, with those chosen family members.
Can I ask what your mom's name was?
Yeah, my mom's name was Marianne Therese Cody. She had just graduated with her master's in social work from Fordham University. She died a year later. And keep in mind, too, like, she was a girl from Queens who wanted to start her life. And in that time in the 70s, like, you had to get married to, like, get out of your house, you know. So I guess my dad was the best option at the time. And they didn't want her family influencing our bringing up, you know, which... there's 100 million reasons why. So they moved us to the country, which was always my dad's dream. And then when I was like in high school, my mom started going to college. So she didn't even start going to college until she was in her 40s. And then she graduated. She started at Hudson Valley Community College. She went to Marist and got her bachelor's degree and ended up getting her master's from Fordham. I mean, my sister joke all the time that we're like psychologists just because my mom got her master's degree in social work. Like, well, our mom had a degree. Like, we could totally diagnose these people. It's a little delusional, but it's fun.
Are there parts of your mother that you see in yourself?
Yeah, I see them more in my sister, I think, because my sister's a mother. I think I physically look like my mother quite a bit, but I do think I'm a lot like my dad in many ways. But I see my sister's personality as much, much, much like my mother's and her like mothering ability reflects my mom a lot. Physically, I do resemble my mom. But when it comes to, like, my personality through and through, I'm my dad. There's no doubt. I'd gamble the house away if I had a house. I'd love that. But I also know that about myself, that it's like, okay, just because you're like him doesn't mean you have to be like him.
I'm wondering if we could go back a little bit.
Sure.
You talked about a town close to Hudson. Could you tell me a little bit about that town where you started?
So Kinderhook is where I moved when I was 7 years old in 1987. That's where our family settled from Queens, New York. Super with like little raised ranch in like a, you know, like a suburban community, kind of like one main road with all these little cul-de-sacs pulled off. And the village of Kinderhook was just like a bike ride away, walkable, easy to get to. There was a town park. In the village, there was like a pizza place. There was a candy shop. You know, very typical of like an upstate New York town. And it was kind of like thriving in those early years of us moving there. There was also what was called the Trolley Trail, which is now the Empire State Trail. So the Trolley Trail back then connected my house with some other friends' houses. So we would just like stay on that trail to like get to Morgan's or get to Aaron's, or it was a lot of debauchery on those trails just because you weren't on the main road. So like, there was no chance of your parents driving by and seeing you smoking a cigarette that you'd stolen from them or Also, it was like in this very historic, beautiful backdrop. Like, so you have all of this like historic, beautiful like mansions on the main street. Very like picturesque childhood. And I can see why my parents like chose Kinderhook, because you get to the village and there's like a little pizza shop and this little candy store. And it was just very like quaint and quiet. But also just like just enough population to make it feel like you're not like living in the country all alone, which I'm sure that that would have been very isolating to two people that grew up in New York City. But still to this day, like to see like also over the years, all of those little shops and storefronts closed down, and like Kinderhook was kind of just like a beautiful place to live because it had all these historic mansions. There wasn't much to offer in like a social life or a going out life or dining. And now this whole like Hudson Valley tourist revitalization has happened, but it has also like helped bring life back to the village. And now there's like a little bar and a restaurant and a little coffee shop and a bagel place. So there's like all this new things happening in these old, historic, beautiful buildings, which it's so nice to see that happening. It's funny because when we were growing up, like all we wanted to do was like, especially in our early 20s, like, oh, we wish we could have like a bar in Kinderhook. And now there is. It's just like in my adult life, it's nice. But it's something that we all wanted so badly as young adults. It's like a great little town. It's a great little place to raise kids. But also, like, that was before social media. That was before cell phones. It was such a simpler time. You had to get bullied face-to-face. Like, you couldn't internet bully, you know?
What's it like seeing that change become a reality when it's something you wanted?
Oh, it's amazing. It's beautiful. Like, it's beautiful to see the empty storefronts have life in them. It's beautiful to see these old buildings get, like, restored and revitalized rather than knocked down and, like, new modern things put up. It's just, like, beautiful to see, like, an old school building in the village of Kinderhook is now, like, a really renowned art gallery. It's called the Jack Shaman School. And, like, I used to ride my bike there to play CYO basketball. And now it's just, like, full of, like, Nick Cave art. And, like, it's, like, a place, like, a destination. You know, it's amazing. I love it. I couldn't have asked for, like, better things to be happening in this little town that I grew up in than to see it, like, restored and revitalized.
I'm thinking about what you said about your grandmother and how she had some maybe unsavory views.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how, I mean, I don't know how that passed on to your parents, but I'm wondering how developing your own view happened over the course of your life.
I wonder that too. My parents died my mom died so young that it's like, these are things that I definitely attribute to her, because she was the one that needed to break away from like her family so badly. And my mom was like this very like open book, gentle soul. And I'm sure she had a lot of views that she maybe didn't share with me, because she wanted me to be able to critical think. She wanted all of her children to have that like critical thinking ability, probably because she was so stunted in her youth of being able to have those critical thinking skills that when she was old enough to start thinking on her own, she wanted to make sure when she had kids, she gave them that same privilege. My dad, not so much. Like, in the world today, if we had to like put it into like today's political perspective, like my dad was a Republican and my mom was like a bleeding heart liberal. And I couldn't say, like, I like to think, like, my dad actually wouldn't be a Republican in today's political world, because he learned so much over the years from my mother and her perspectives that he grew a lot. Here's an example of, like, when we lived in the city, I was so young that it's not something I like really remember, but I do remember like we went to church every Sunday. My mom and dad were like a big part of the Catholic community. My mom was like president of the like women's club, and church was something that we did. We like bowled with Father Frank on Saturdays. And like, this is just like a lot of that isn't necessarily my memory, but things that we talk about in our adult life about our childhood. When we moved to upstate New York, we had like a family meeting, and my parents were like, okay, like, do you guys want to go to church? Should we find a church to join? And of course the three of us being like 7, 12 and, or like 7, 10 and like 13, were like, absolutely not. Like, church sucks. We don't want to go to church. And then my mom was like, okay, but like, that's fine. We don't have to go to church, but Sunday will be family day, and like dub Sunday family day. And then all of a sudden, like all five of us are in the car going to like Howe Caverns, or we're going to yard sales, or we're going to Edward R. Murrow State Park. Like, there was always like something we did as a family on Sunday. And I'm so glad that it wasn't church in my adult life. But I think that her giving, like bringing that to the table and letting us make that decision as a group started that ability for us to like critically think. And then my grandmother didn't move upstate until my mom passed away in 2002. My grandmother decided to buy a house up here. And in my, like, so I wasn't really exposed to her in my youth. I was more exposed to her as an adult, as a young adult. And there would just be like time and time again that I was just like, my mom was so validated and like, thank you for not letting this person influence the way we live. Because it was constantly just like, talk about your body, or if you're skinny enough, or talk about Jesus and how gay people are bad, or talking about like anything like that. It was just, and I would just be like, my grandmother told me once that I wasn't going to heaven because I never had my first communion. And it's like laughable, because I would say, you think I'm a good person? Do you think I do the right thing for my family? And she's like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like, any question I would ask her or throw at her, she would absolutely agree. Like, no, you're a really good person, but you never had that first communion. You're damned to hell. And like, I couldn't even like have a logical conversation with her on that level. But it just also was just like very validating of like my mom's decision to separate us from that rhetoric from a young age.
Do you remember a time where you made a decision that felt like you sort of differentiating your beliefs?
No, I can't say there was any. I can't say there was any like definitive time that I was like, I mean, I feel like these things do happen in like your like formative years of like teenage life. And I grew up in the 90s, which was like, you know, alternative rock. Also, like, it was a very like anti-racist time. Like, that wasn't something that we were allowing. And keep in mind, like, I went to a mostly white school. So it wasn't something that I really had to deal with on a day-to-day basis, but there were people of color that went to our school, and there wasn't like, no one was gonna like treat them any different. And if they did, they got punched in the face because nobody was like allowing that to happen. It also wasn't a time that like gay people could just be gay. It was a time that like people were like, they're out there, you know, they exist. But it wasn't something where like, but I do remember being like, oh, I gay, but then also like knowing like it doesn't matter, you know. I never had any kind of like hate talk or anything like that in our house, so it was very easy to like see societal things happening and being able to make my own decisions on them, because my parents never hate talked to anybody or like had hate speech. It was very much like I can go to them and they would listen, but they never would like talk bad about people because of their like color or gender or sexual preference, which I think is very important. Because so many people are influenced by, you know, what goes on in their house and the rhetoric that the talk and the speak of how people speak about each other or speak about people, people's choices or non-choices. And it just trickles down, where I was very lucky to like, that wasn't something that happened to us. We were able to like make our own decisions. And then my parents died. They were so nice. They were such good parents.
How did you cope?
Who says I did? Who says I have? There was so much, honestly, like, I didn't really. My mom was very sick. I got into a very, like, abusive relationship with someone right around the time that she was passing away. So I guess that was a nice big distraction, you know, from the reality. I also, like, needed a place to live, and he had a house, so that was convenient. And in that time, this is, like, going into my 20s now, I kind of lost connection with my brother and sister at that time. I stayed pretty close with my dad. My dad and I were always pretty close. And then for a majority of my 20s, I was just like with this crazy guy living in Greene County. So I was still pretty local. And then out of nowhere, my sister and her boyfriend at the time got engaged, and they had been together for like 10 or 12 years by then. So they finally decided to like take the plunge, and my sister had asked me to be in her wedding. And that's when her and I reconnected. And that's also when I was like, I need to get out of this relationship. And I finally, like, told my sister how awful my boyfriend was and how much I hated him, and I needed to get away from him, and she let me move into her house with, like, her new husband a year after they got married. Yeah. I thought she hated me, too, because I moved in. They had just been married a year. They had just bought this house. It was like a 3-bedroom, so it was big enough for the three of us. And I moved in, and me and my sister were like, oh my god, this is gonna be so much fun, like, living together again in, like, our adult life. And then she, like, disappeared. She was just, like, in her room all the time. She just never felt good. And it turned out that, like, she, like, like, days before I moved in, she had gotten pregnant, but she had also contracted Lyme disease. So she was, like, newly pregnant with, like, pregnancy symptoms and, like, morning sickness, but also Lyme disease sickness. And she also couldn't tell anybody that she was pregnant because it was, like, that first trimester. And we still joke about it to this day. She was like, I didn't hate you. I was just sick with Lyme disease and pregnancy. But yeah, that helped me a lot to, like, get out of that relationship. She was a big part in helping me move on from that.
What's your relationship with your sister like?
Oh, she's, like, my best friend. It's funny because I am so close with her, but things, like, we don't talk about politics. Like, we don't talk about who we voted for. But we can have, like, deep discussions about the world and, like, the state of the world and our viewpoints. But she has, like, these two kids that she feels like she needs to protect. And then she has this, like, crazy sister who is definitely, like, more of a progressive liberal than she or her husband are. So I come through the door just like with my rant on the world today, you know, which is like very influential, I'm sure, to my niece and nephew. But I want them to have the different perspectives, you know, and they're also like, this is what I meant by she reflects my mom so much, is because she allows them to have those like critical thinking moments. She doesn't put her opinions in their heads because they don't even know, like I've had conversations with them, they don't even know like what my sister's politics are necessarily, like my sister's views on religion. She's just like, I don't want to influence them. I want them to have their own viewpoints, which I just am so proud of her when it comes to like motherhood, having that ability. And my beautiful little niece is just like a little progressive feminist, and I'm obsessed with her. I love that.
What's it like being an aunt?
Oh my god, it's the best thing ever. It's the best thing ever, but it's also like, they don't know me fully, you know, like they don't know like Sarah out at the bar. They know like Sasa at the house, you know, and not that those two people are different, you know, but they are, they're different people. So it's funny, but it's just incredible. It's so nice because I knew from a young age I didn't want kids. But having these like two kids in my life that I get to like have all the fun with, and I don't actually have to take care of them in a way, has been ideal. You know, like I still get to like influence them. I still get to spoil them. Me and my nephew have been hiking in the Catskills together, which is like such an amazing thing that I have, that he and I have together. Yeah, it's just incredible. They both like look up to me so much, which I want to have that relationship with them. I always want them to see me in like a good light. And I get emotional because I have all these like family members that suck so much. They're just like bigots and like, ugh, I can't. I could have like this big family, but they're all just so awful that I'm just not like, I'm not walking on eggshells for anybody. I'm not just going to be complacent to like your world views. Like, absolutely not. So I know how like my family has panned out, and I have these like opinions of my other relatives that aren't nice. Like they're not good opinions. So I want to make sure that I want to make sure my legacy with them is that they're always like looking up to me. Because I think it will help them also just be good people in the long run. And I want nothing more for them to just be like good, kind people in the world. Because if I was anything like some of my family members, I'd be a really shitty, like a racist, bigot, like homophobe. I'd be homophobic. I'd be racist. But I would be Catholic. Like I would believe in God. So I guess that makes it all better, right? But yeah, so it's important to me that they grow up to be good people. And I want to set that example for them. And I think I am. My sister still lets me come around, so it must be okay.
I'm curious about what you just said. You know, you'd still be a Catholic. Like,
they're just like growing up in that like organized religion world. Like, so like the generations before me have all been like indoctrinated into the Catholic Church. My mother and my father, they went to Catholic school, they went to church. My grandmother, even like to her dying day, was like, oh, can't wait to meet Jesus. Like, he's the best. All of my mom's side of the family are all like raised Catholics, but they're all like racists and terrible people. And like, I just, it doesn't connect for me. So when we left the church to move upstate, my mom had given us that chat, like, do you guys want to go to church or do you not? And we were like, no, we don't want to go to church. And then like, the more I reflect on like the people that I know that were, that are like close to me anyway, I can't speak in like a general term, but the family members that I have and know that were all like so Catholic and like so religious and, you know, church going, they're some of the worst people I know when it comes to like actually treating other people with dignity and respect. I'm sorry, what was the question?
I don't know if I asked
a question. Yeah, it's just like, it's funny because I just reflect and like, even now, like, I look at the world in a big picture and it's such a crazy time. Like, the political divide in the world that we live in now, I mean, you could cut it with a knife, right? So when I look at the bigger picture and I look at the people that I don't want to be like, it's mostly these, like, people that are indoctrinated in some kind of, like, organized religious, you know, group of people that, like, claim to be these, like, holier than thou, we're such good people. Those people, in my mind, in my eye, are the ones that treat people that don't have the same privilege or, you know, are from a different, just from like a different background. Like, they are the worst people to those people. It's the ones that are like, claim to be so like God-fearing and it's like, well, you know, they're the first people to like cut someone down for like being homeless or being trans or, you know, it's wild to me. And it, like, even in my everyday life, like, it's those people that are the worst people. So I don't want to be like that. And like, I just read this thing recently where it's like, well, an atheist has no reason to be a good person other than just to be a good person. There's no like, oh, I'm a good person because of God. They're just a good person because that's the way it should be. Like, you should just be a kind and good person. You shouldn't have to have some kind of motivation where, oh, well, if I'm not, this will happen to me. Like, no, just be a good person. Like, there doesn't have to be a consequence.
Are there times or activities, moments in your life where you felt really connected to something much bigger than yourself?
I definitely have to say, like, even just hiking in the area in the Catskills. They're not very big mountains. They're pretty old mountains, but they're not very big. But just being up there in the vastness of like Catskill Park or any of those mountain ranges, you really do feel just like a speck. It's also just so quiet out there when it comes, like, even just like, there's no, like, you don't hear an airplane, you don't hear a car or a chainsaw motor. You know, it could just be like your own dialogue if you have that, you know, like your own kind of internal dialogue. And I find that when I'm out there, even my like internal dialogue quiets because you realize how unimportant so many things are, because the world is really just so big. And out there, you really see how simple things are. Like, it could just be very simple. I also have to say, like, traveling, you know, like, sometimes I feel like Hudson is this little, because Hudson is this like tourist destination, we have people from all over the world that come to Hudson. And I think that I have to say, I've had this conversation with other like Hudsonites or like people like implants here, where it's like, I forget in Hudson, like, I forget there's another world out there. sometimes I forget at like that, like I forget how tiny we are. Like, who hasn't heard of Hudson? You know, like, of course you're in Hudson. Like, Hudson's Hudson. Like, everybody knows Hudson, but they don't. It's like such a speck on the map. And then you travel somewhere and you're like, oh, look, other people living a life. Like, this actually happens all over the world, not just in Hudson. Yeah, sometimes I feel like I get a little caught up in this little town. It's very kind of charming in that way. And I think just like knowing that, you know, I'm just a speck. Like, I have that knowledge. I can see that, like, we're all just like a little speck. It's not so serious, because the world is such a big, vast place with so many bad things happening, so many good things too. But yeah, there's so many things like bigger than planet Earth even.
When you say, you know, so many people come here, but people don't know Hudson, what do you mean? What are you talking
about? Well, like, I grew up here. Like, I know, I've always known of Hudson, right? Since I've learned of Hudson as a child, I, like, know the little city. And it's changed so much over the last 40 years. There's just, like, I feel like what happens... Maybe it is just me, but I don't think it is. I think you could talk to other people that have like moved here and they might feel the same way. Just like the social structure in Hudson, there's just this like, I come to Hudson and I'm like, oh, all like the best food, there's shopping, the cutest little town, it's historic, oh, the coolest little history, like I feel like everyone, like, it should just be, like, a place on the map that, like, everyone knows about. But it absolutely isn't. It's just a speck on the map. Like, Hudson, New York is not somewhere, like, it's not in the, like, every history book across the country where people are, like, learning about this little town. But for some reason, I hold Hudson, like, in my brain as that place of, like, this very important hub. Like, how do you not know about Hudson, New York? It's on the Hudson River. Like, how do you not know about it? You know, but I don't know. Maybe that's just like me and my narcissism in town of like how I think it's a great little town and everybody should know about it. And people should come here to like eat and shop and discover upstate and to get outside. Like, it has all of those things accessible to it. So I like get a reality check. Like, even if I just like go out to dinner in Albany and I'm like, oh, this is actually like a great restaurant. Like, great restaurants exist outside of Hudson. I have to like remind myself that sometimes. Like, oh, there's a whole world out there outside of Hudson. Like, it's not the capital of the world.
You must see a lot of people who come through here.
Yeah, it's such an interesting place in that way. I worked in a hotel in town for 8 years. I headed up their front desk, basically, like their guest services. And the amount of people that came through the hotel, you know, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. There's always just like, it's like from all over the world, which I always found so interesting. But then it's very accessible from New York City. So what would happen is people would be traveling on holiday from Europe and they'd say, let's explore another little town, and they can hop right on the Amtrak train and come 2 hours north of Hudson, and they get to have this whole other experience while they're here, you know, visiting New York City. So yeah, you meet so many people, and like, I couldn't tell you their names, but I've had so many people like influence my life in such a big way. Just by like a sentence that they've said, or like the little connection that you have with someone in just a moment. And working in hospitality, I think a lot of people could relate to this, because you do just deal with the masses. And like, yes, you have your like regulars and they can affect your life too, but not necessarily like a passerby who just says the right thing in the right moment. of your life, you know, and then you just hold that with you forever. I have a mantra that I say that I learned from someone who checked into the hotel I was working in. And this is just like post-pandemic. I turned 40 years old during the pandemic. And I was like, I'm not going to the store for like a banana. I was also like a pack-a-day smoker, keep that in mind. But I was like, I'm not going to the store for like a banana. I definitely can't go to the store for a pack of cigarettes. Like, that's crazy. So logically in my mind, like, it made sense that I just had to quit smoking. And then not long after, the hotel reopens. And I had this older couple check in. And I don't even know, like, I couldn't tell you their names. I can kind of tell you what he looks like, but I don't even know how we got on the topic, but we got on the topic of like running in marathons, smoking cigarettes. And like, we had this whole conversation. He also had like quit smoking cigarettes years before, but he said, you know, I was a pack a day smoker, and I still to this day say I'm one away from a pack a day. And there's not a day that goes by that I actually don't say that sentence, because I quit smoking and now it's like 6 years ago, but so often, at least once a day, and here, like, even if I'm just telling the story, I'm saying the mantra, right? So here's the one time I said it today. But that person that checked into that hotel one day, like, he gave me that gift. And so often in hospitality, that happens. And I think that's why so many of us in the field of hospitality stay in it, because you do have those connections with people. Or even us sitting here right now, you know, like, we met in the bar I work in, and we had a fun night, and I was your waitress, and it was super fun, and you guys had a lot of fun, and then here we are, you know, sitting here at this table having this conversation. It's because of those like little connections. So there's like so many of those moments. Those are two that stand out to me right now. And this town, because of the revitalization of this town and the fact that the revitalization was based on tourism, gave me that opportunity to come work here into a place that, like, we didn't go below 3rd Street back in the day, because that's like the gangs were below 3rd Street. Like, it was really bad. You're also like getting closer to the riverfront. You're getting closer to the train station. Now I can like make a really great living for myself. It's really important that the progression continues in that way. And it's sad because I think a lot of people like don't necessarily want to see Hudson progress in that way, because it inhibits their way of life, you know, their small town, quiet way of life. And they can't see the big picture.
How did you quit smoking?
I really was just like, in my brain, I was like, I can't. The pandemic happened in March of 2020. My birthday is in March, so I literally had my 40th birthday, and like the world is crumbling around me. And I was like, I don't want to go to the store for food. Like, I fucking need food. You need to eat food to, like, survive. I absolutely can't go to the store and buy a pack of cigarettes. Like, it just logically, like, it did not line up, so much so that I threw away my pack of cigarettes and quit smoking. And it's been 6 years. But I'm one away from a pack a day, because I fucking love to smoke cigarettes. I won't lie. Yeah. But I also know it's just, like, it really also stems back to, like, setting that example for my niece and nephew, right? Because I never would smoke in front of them. I would never necessarily, like, talk about cigarettes in front of them. I don't want them to see me smoking. I don't want to give them that influence. Like, I smoked because my parents smoked. I caught my sister smoking. Now it's cool. You know, my friends all were smoking. All their parents were smoking. If I didn't have all those people in my life smoking around me, I probably would never have smoked a cigarette. So I want to make sure that I give my niece and nephew that same chance. I want them to have the chance of, like, ew, gross, no, I don't want to smoke. Nobody around me does that. Rather than, like, the opposite. Because that's what I grew up in. I grew up in the opposite of that, where everybody was smoking. All the time. At the dinner table. In the car. Yeah. It took me too long, but I finally, like... I also was like, I'm not getting any younger, you know? I'm aging out of society as it is. I can't, like, smoke cigarettes, too. That's crazy. Yeah, so it was really just, like, it clicked. It's just one of those things that I was like, it doesn't make sense to smoke cigarettes anymore.
I have so many questions for you, but I wanted to make sure, like, to see if there are things that I haven't asked you about that you'd really like to talk about.
I don't think so. It's so hard to just, like, come up with things on my own. It's actually easier when you ask a question.
Or a person that you wanted to talk about.
Not really. I think I've mentioned all the key players already.
I'm curious, in your role, you know, I met you working when you were working the server, and you interface with so many people, and I'm curious about what it's like being in a service role in a tourist destination.
You can ask 100 different bartenders and servers that question. You're going to get 100 different answers, I think. So I can give you my answer personalized to me. And I would say it's very much like being on stage. It's my show, but I don't get to choose who buys the tickets, right? I want to make money. I also want to have fun. Working as a server or bartender doesn't have to be so worky, you know? I don't have to, you know, it could be fun. People are generally out at a bar and restaurant because they want to have fun. So I've always kind of looked at it like that. I've been in the service industry for 25 years. I started in my early 20s. I've always been able to make a good living. I'm also, like, good with people. I can just talk to strangers. I have no social inhibition when it comes to that platform. Maybe I have social anxiety if I have to, like, go to a party or, you know, go into a crowd of people where I don't have the safety of, like, a reason to talk to them. Where at work, I have the safety of, like, I have to go up to this table and ask them questions. You know, it's like a safety net. There's no, like, embarrassment. There's no, like, social anxiety. I've also just, like, always kind of been an extrovert. I've always kind of been able to get along with, like, all demographics of people. I can kind of be, like, a chameleon in that way. But, like, in not, like, a fake way. In, like, a genuine way. I want people to like me. Mostly, because there's also, like, that. So working at Governor specifically, and I've said this to some other people, because it's not fine dining. It's like fast casual dining where I can work in all aspects. I could work in fine dining. I could work whatever. I chose Governor's because it's the one place that I can, like, always be myself. I never have to, like, have on my professional pants or speak to people in a certain tone or manner or, like, be so forgiving if someone's being rude. Like, at Governor's, you get the best of me, and when you give me the worst of you, I'm going to tell you you're giving me the worst of you. Like, I don't have to be like, oh, this guy's a prick and I just have to take it. We're in so many realms of, like, restaurant work, you do. At Governor's, like, I don't. And I have the owner's backing on that. Like, if you're being rude or if you're being unruly or if you're whatever, we get to tell you that. And I love that about that place, that it's like, there's no, like, fakeness. There's no, like, fake bartender, phony whatever. It's always, like, what you see is what you get. I can always just be myself there. And that, in general, is I want to make money. And when I'm, like, my most fun self, and most friendly self, everyone that works there is making the most money. but also it gives the guests like a great experience where they're having the great time and then they also have everything that they need and, you know, their server's kind of interjecting and maybe helping start a conversation or putting in some 2 cents or whatever. It's just something I've always loved about the business, but Governor specifically because there's no, like, you don't have to, like, pull any wool over. You don't have to pretend. Just, like, very simple and basic. And so many restaurants in town are, like, opposite of that, right? Have you been out to eat in town at all? It's all very kind of, like, I mean, back in the day we would call it farm to table, but, like, what restaurant are you eating in that the food didn't come from a farm? You know, this is a great marketing ploy. But, like, literally Hudson is farm to table because we're using all the farms and agriculture surrounding this little tiny city. And the restaurants are abundant with, like, beautiful, delicious food. You're also dealing with tourists who are spending a lot of money to come to this town and to eat in our restaurants. And they expect to be treated a certain way. And then if you're not holding that standard for them, you know, it could be a real rough night at work. And I've worked in those restaurants too, and it's just like, it's just not a good fit for me. I'm not good at faking it. I want everyone that like has grown up in Hudson to understand that, like, before the revitalization of this town, like in the 80s and 90s, their town was a shithole. And, like, they would never ever admit to that. They hold it in this, like, high regard. And now they, like, I hear so many of them, like, talk about how tourism is ruining this town, and I understand, like, with gentrification, like, things do happen that aren't necessarily great for the community as a whole, especially, like, the community that's in more need. They do tend to, like, get priced out, but this community is so specifically special because they're trying not to do that, and they're trying to, like, revitalize their subsidized housing, and they're trying to make it work for the entire community. But I have this philosophy that, like, the only people that I hear that rhetoric from are from, like, who they once were, like, the elite of the town. And now that, like, gentrification has come in, people that have more money than them have come here. So they're not top tier. They're not necessarily the richest people or the most affluent people in town. And I think that they feel challenged and they feel, what's the word I'm looking for? I think that they have, like, a lot of animosity for that. Like, they want to be the top dog, and now they're not the top dog. And now they're like, well, this town is stupid with all these tourists and all this, like, gentrification. But I feel like if they were still top dog, they wouldn't necessarily think that way. Instead of, like, embracing the fact that their town has been, like, revitalized and restored, and there's the shops are full, and there's restaurants happening, and the farms are enriched because the food from our farms that are right outside our town are going directly back into, like, the small business owners' restaurants in the town. Like, there's this whole thing that they, like, just bigger picture that they just refuse to see. And it's really frustrating from someone who comes from the area and sees what Hudson used to be versus what it is today and what a beautiful change it is. It's just, like, really frustrating. Because you also don't want to necessarily, like, ostracize anyone, right? Regardless of what their viewpoints are. Because if you really, like, if I want to, like, preach everything that I'm saying, I'm still going to treat them kindly and I'm still going to treat them with respect. So I think that there's like a challenge here in this particular area with like this like local viewpoint versus like the bigger picture of like what the growth potential and progress really means for a community. And I think on a molecular level, you can see those things in restaurants and in bars. They're just like little microcosms of the community. Governors especially is like such a little microcosm of Hudson in general. So I just think it's a good fit for me. But I'm getting old. Moving kegs is hard.
What are your hopes for your life in the next 10 to 15 years?
Oh, I hope that I stay healthy. I hope that I get to have more experiences hiking with my nephew. I mean, I'm very simple. I hope to travel to places I've never been before. I just hope that, like, things are always so complicated. Lives are so complicated that my real hope for like the next 5 to 10 years is just that I can keep things as like simple as possible and also like stay healthy, you know, those kinds of things. You try your best. But like my grandma said, I am a good time Charlie, so I do like to party now and again. A little martini here and there. Yeah, I just want things, I just hope that things stay simple and the people that I love stay in good health and that I get to continue having like meaningful experiences with them and their kids as we all grow older. I hope that we all grow older because when you have, you know, parents that die at such a young age, you can't help but reflect and be like, oh, I got 4 more years. You know, so it's like I definitely reflect in those ways. My sister and I do a lot, probably to an unhealthy level. But I think that because of that, it has like pushed us both to be a little bit more outside of our comfort zone when it comes to traveling. It's so easy to not travel, you know. But yeah, so I want my friends and family to stay healthy, and I hope that in the next 10 years I get to live side by side with them and have more meaningful experiences with them.
Your chosen family, these 3 women in your life, what do you guys do together when you're at your best?
Well, so we all have very different relationships in our adult life. Well, like when we were younger, we were definitely like partying a little more. So a little bit of a history. My one friend, Shauna, she was the young girl at the time that lived in Hudson but went to Ichabod. Her and I moved to Las Vegas together in our early 20s. She ultimately left me there. Fuck you, Shauna. You know what you did. and, you know, like having that experience brought us really close, but we also like broke up as friends for a long, long time. We didn't talk to each other. And in our adult life, we reconnected. And I have to say, she's somebody that like, we have had like, I don't want to say like outer body experiences with each other, but we, I mean, like for an example, like when we were younger and we were living in Las Vegas, and I'm sure it had to do with the fact that we were like going through a lot of the same things for the first time in our early 20s, that we were having the exact same dreams. Which would, it's really weird when you're telling someone a dream and they're like, that's actually what I dreamt about last night. But here's like an example, like we're very spiritually connected somehow. Here's a perfect example of mine and Shauna's connection. One day we were like living in this area and we were like, let's just like go on a day trip. Let's go to Woodstock. Like everybody loves Woodstock. Let's go to Woodstock. So we drive to Woodstock. Shauna loves psychic readings, Ouija boards, ghosts. Like I don't necessarily love that. But I support my friend. And we're like in Woodstock and we walk by a psychic and she's like, I want to go into this psychic. And I go, that's fine. She goes to the ATM because of course the psychic's cash only. As soon as we walk into this woman's establishment, she just like hones in on me. She's like, you're from Queens. I feel like I know you. And like, I didn't even talk to this woman. And she was like plotting like where she knew where I was from originally. She was like, I feel like I've met you before. But then of course, like I'm a cynic. So I'm like, okay, psychic lady. Like I kind of was like dubbing it as bullshit. So she's like, well, my friend Sean is like rubbing a crystal. And she's like, your friend, like, do you want your friend here? She's going to hear a lot of like personal things. And my friend Shauna was like, yeah, she can stay. I'm just going to tell her everything anyway. The psychic reading pursues. And the woman is just going on and on. And she is just missing the mark with Shauna on every way that she can. She's like, well, you have a brother and a sister. Shauna looks over at me. She doesn't have a brother and a sister. She's got like 4 brothers. She doesn't have a sister. You know, so like things were just not panning out. And then this woman is like, well, there's this woman looking over your brother. And Shauna's like, okay. And she's like, she's jovial. She's got red cheeks. She's got dark hair. And Shauna's like, okay. And she's like, Anne. And Shauna's like, I don't know an Anne. And the woman starts banging on the table. She's like, Anne is looking over your brother, Anne. She's like, the woman's name is Anne. And Shauna's just like, okay, like, doesn't know how to really react because she doesn't know anyone named Anne. And like, they wrap it up, we leave. We start like rehashing the psychic reading. We start like laughing about it, like, wow, that wasn't you at all. We drive back to my place. We go inside and Shauna's big on like going through old photographs because that's when like you actually had like tangible pictures. So I have like boxes and boxes of tangible pictures from our youth. Shauna's like, let's go through old pictures and drink wine. Perfect. Let's do it. So Shauna and I are in my apartment. I pull out the picture boxes. We crack open a bottle of wine. We're sitting there. We're going through everything. We're laughing. We're like looking at pictures of us as teenagers. And I can vividly remember this. I turn to my left. I take 2 pictures out of the box at the same time and flip them over. And one is a funeral card. And one is a picture of my dad's mother, Anne Cody. And the picture is her, red-cheeked, dark hair, just like a bright face, like jovial, like you couldn't describe it any other way. It was like the picture. And then it was her funeral card, Anna Mae Cody. And I'm like, Anne. And I hand it to Shauna, like crying. Like at this point, like I start tearing up and I hand her the picture and the funeral card. And her face turns like white. And she goes, holy shit, she was reading you the whole time. And when we really kind of went back, the woman had been reading me the entire psychic reading. And it was just like, but like those are experiences I've had with Shauna that set us apart from like my other friends. Yeah. And those are like things that Shauna and I have like experienced together. It's always like, it's so Shauna coded too, but it's always like some unworldly, like out of this world thing. Janice, another young woman, and keep in mind, like we were all in the same friend group as kids too. Janice is like my party friend. We're getting in trouble. Like Janice and I are out in the town. We're getting in trouble. I have to, like, find her. She's at three bars down the road. You know, like, there's no doubt about it. She's also, like, been a great friend that we've, like, traveled with. She's kind of up for anything. Like, she's like, let's go. Let's travel. We're both poor. Who cares? We'll go. Morgan is, like... So Morgan's the one that called me to tell me my father had died. And, like, Morgan is, like, she's such an amazing woman. She's a single mother. She has two amazing kids. Like, I look up to her so much. She's so, like, docile compared to me. She's so sweet and just, like, and we joke. I'm like, how are you my friend? Like, how did I get a nice... You're so nice. Like, how did you stay friends with me all these years? Because I'm definitely, like, the outspoken one in the group. But she's just, like, my family. Through and through. I've just known those people for so long. And, like, I think of them still in, like... When I, like, picture them in my eye, they're, like, teenagers. It's funny, I just kind of had that realization, and it's always that way. Like, I see them as, like, young women. I never see them as they are now. I see them in my mind as those, like, young women that we all were. Yeah, they're all very special to me. There was another one. I had another friend, and I broke up with her. During the pandemic, and we were like, everyone was shocked because we were like the closest of the group. It was like her and I, and like during the pandemic, just like a lot of just like things revealed themselves to me, and it was just like always happening, but she was just like a very toxic friend. Where it was like, it wasn't like that party friend like Janice where like, I know we're getting into trouble. It was like, oh Jesus, here we go. Like, what is this night gonna bring? Now she's on one and you're just like there for the ride. You know, it was her world. You were just living in it. And I just like had enough. And I broke up with her during the pandemic and it was all very shocking to the friend group. And then I took them all to Ireland after my grandma passed away. It was like a really good way for me to say fuck you to my grandma. Because she, first of all, wasn't Italian, but loved Italy. And my dad was Irish. So with some of my inheritance, I took my friends to Ireland in honor of my dad with my grandmother's money. Yeah, just to kind of spite her. But while we were in Ireland, they came at me like, why aren't you friends with so-and-so anymore? And we had a whole breakdown. And then once I, like, hashed it all out, they were like, yeah, you don't have to be friends with her anymore. I was like, yeah. Like, I wasn't just being, like, selfish or, like, a jerk. Yeah, I just didn't want to, like, go on that roller coaster all the time. Just always was, like, it was just always stressful being friends with her. So there was another woman that I was really close friends with that I broke up with. And we all grew up like in this little radius of each other.
Can you just, I want to close soon, but I just have this image from the beginning of our conversation of you and Janice coming to Hudson as teenagers.
Oh, God.
I'm wondering if you could share a story from
it would be, yeah. It was the other girl, too, the one I broke up with. We would get in a lot of trouble in Hudson. There were two bars that were always open late. It was Molino's. And then there was another bar called Cappy's. And then, so, they were right around the corner from each other. So you can, like, go to one, walk around the block, and go to the other one. But next to Molino's, I don't know, you don't live in Hudson, so you're not very familiar with the geographic layout or like the businesses in town, but there's a restaurant in town called Little Deb's Oasis. It used to be Little Deb's Diner. So they kept most of the name. And that diner would be open 24 hours. And we would go from Molino's to Cappy's, and then we'd walk the other way around the block and end at Little Deb's for breakfast sandwiches. And this is like before cell phones, and I just remember getting in so many situations where I was like, I don't have a car. I need to get to a house that's 20 minutes away. There was one particular night. We actually were still in high school. This is a good, you're going to love this to close it out. We were still in high school. It was Shauna, Janice, and I. And Shauna had like a Hudson boyfriend. That's like how we ended up hanging out in Hudson all the time, because Shauna had a young man who was our age. So we would get together with him and like all his buddies. And there was six of us. It was three girls, three boys. And we were hanging out at the Hudson school baseball field. We were hanging out in the dugout. And Shauna and the one boy were having sex in the car. And I mean, we were like 18. Like, we were just about to graduate high school. And me, Janice, and the other two boys were in the dugout. And the cops showed up. And I actually was just about to fail high school. Like, I was not graduating. So I was like, I cannot get in any fucking trouble. Like, I'm already in such a, like, mess that if I get caught right now, like, I'm dead. So me and two of the boys ran into the woods, and Janice was like, it's her car. Like, it was her car. So she had to go back. So Shauna and Janice ended up getting arrested that night for trespassing. And I actually walked from Hudson High School to Shauna's parents' house on Fish and Game Road, which is probably like 8 miles, like in the middle of the night. Because all to just, like, I already knew I was already in trouble. And then they got arrested. They got caught. Their names were in the paper. And I was with them that night, but I didn't get caught. So fast forward, my dad bumped into Janice's stepmom at like the local convenience store. And she was like, can you believe these girls? And told my dad the whole story. And like, my parents had no idea that this even happened, right? And my dad came home and he was like, he like took me aside and he told me he knew. And he was like, you know, like, grilling me. And I was like, Dad, I ran. He goes, listen, your mother's never gonna know. You're not in trouble because you didn't get caught. And he just left it at that. He never spoke another word about it. And it's just very much my dad, like, growing up, he was like a bad kid in Queens. Like, he was not a good kid. I would leave the house, like, I was a pretty good kid, like, for the most part. I would leave the house and he would say, don't get caught. Right? So fast forward to like me in my adult life, like actually getting in trouble, but not because I didn't get caught. It was like full circle moment for my dad. Like, oh, the advice paid off. Like, you're not in trouble because you didn't get caught. But both of them, I'm sure their parents had to pay like big fines because they both got trespassing charges at like 18 years old. That was Hudson though. Hudson, keeping it real. The good old days in Hudson. So simple.
Thank you so much for sharing all these amazing.
Thank you. This was fun. I feel like I was all over the place, but it was fun.
I was following the whole time.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed hearing my history.
I really did.
It was really fun. I knew too I was going to get emotional. It's hard to not get emotional when you're talking about people that you care about so much. But thank you so much, Jess. This was great.
Thank you. Oh, room tone. We're just going to sit in silence for 1 minute, and then we're going to turn off the recorder.
Okay. Oh my God, I'm like, I can't even breathe. I'm such a loud